The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
We should take great pride in the progress that we've made over the last 8 years. That's the bottom line. No foreign terrorist organization has successfully planned and executed an attack on our homeland.
You know, if he wants to end his legacy on the biggest lie piled upon all the big lies, that is what he is doing. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I thought that he was gone, but no, he's now trying to rewrite history. And he just said something that needs to be challenged. Listen to it again. This is your president. He's the reason that Hillary lost and Trump won. Of course, he's now Trump's best friend. And Trump likes him very much personally, which is astounding to me. I thought that he called him every name under the sun while he was running, but okay, politics is politics, I get that. And I guess you got to keep your friends close and your enemies closer, but the fact of the matter is, there were quite a few terror attacks since Barry Hussein Obama became president, and for him to change the history of his presidency is embarrassing and dangerous. It's embarrassing for obvious reasons, but it's dangerous for obvious reasons. So let's list the terror attacks by foreign terrorist organizations under the Obama presidency. Little Rock, Arkansas, June 1st, 2009. Abdulahim Muhammad killed one soldier outside of a military recruiting station. He later claimed to be a member of Al-Qaeda. Fort Hood, Texas, remember that one? Major Nidal Hassan opened fire on fellow soldiers on the military base at Fort Hood, killing 13, wounding 53. While in prison, he petitioned to be made a citizen of ISIS. He's still not executed. Why is it that Timothy McVeigh was executed almost immediately to cover up the Oklahoma City bombing, I think, actually, while Major Nidal Hassan is still alive? Why is that? Boston Marathon bombing, April 2013. You remember that one? Tamerlan and Zokar Sarnov. Boston Marathon. Seattle, Washington, April 4, 2014. Seattle, Washington, June 2014. West Orange, New Jersey, 2014. New York City, October 23, 2014. Morgantown, North Carolina, December 18, 2014. New York City, December 20th, 2014. Ismael Brinsley opened fire on New York City police officers while they were sitting in their vehicle to avenge the deaths of Michael Brown and Eric Garner. Well, we can't say that was a terror attack. That doesn't belong on the list, does it? So I'm just making sure you're listening to me. How about Garland, Texas, May 3rd, 2015? Elton Simpson and Nadir Sufi opened fire at a conference center that was hosting an exhibition of a cartoon of Muhammad. The assailants were killed in the attack. Chattanooga, Tennessee. Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz killed five military officers during a shooting rampage at the Naval Operations Support Center and Army Recruiting Office. Abdulaziz was ultimately killed. He expressed admiration of anti-American extremists in the past. Merced, California. Faisal Mohammed attacked students at University of California, Merced. Found the manifesto of ISIS. San Bernardino, remember that one? No, don't hang up the show yet. I know it's painful for you to listen, Jingle Bells. Saeed Razoun Farouk and Tashfeen Malik, remember the nice Muslim couple? A married couple who were Muslim radicals, killed 14 people at a holiday party. San Bernardino, 2015. Columbus, Ohio, February 2016. Mohammed Barry attacked an Ohio restaurant with a Jewish proprietor, Nazareth Restaurant and Deli, with a machete. Orlando, Florida. Sorry to bring that up, Mr. Obama. In a 9/11 call on the night, Omar Mateen killed 49 people at a gay nightclub. He pledged allegiance to the leader of ISIS. Police eventually killed the gunman. That's 2016. Bristol, Tennessee, July 9th. Lakeem Keon Scott. Dallas, Texas. Shooter Mike Xavier Johnson. Again, I don't know that that's related to Islam, but it's on the list. It's a terrorist attack, but not related to Islam. Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Yeah, and that was just merely a black nationalist group killing police. That's run-of-the-mill, you know. But Obama said that we should take great, great pride in the fact that while he was president, there have been no attacks on our soil. What were his exact words? Because he is a lawyer by training, so we have to look at the snake's exact words. No foreign terrorist organization has successfully planned and executed an attack on our homeland. Well, that's parsing the truth. But there were followers of these foreign terrorist organizations, Mr. Obama, who did successfully plan and execute attacks. So what's the difference to the people who are wounded or injured or killed? There is none. All right, topic number two. One is Obama lies about his legacy. Two, the coming war with China, clip one. I know we've been talking about the Taiwan call, but there's a much bigger issue, which is the fact that the military-industrial complex here in the United States and the militarists in China are dying for a war. And since we are celebrating or remembering Pearl Harbor today, December 7th, is the day we remember the attack on Pearl Harbor by the Japanese in that year, we're all worried about another Pearl Harbor. If China were to attack America and do a sneak attack on us, how do you think it would come? It's already come. They've already done a sneak attack on us. They own half our businesses and they own our currency. They own wheat fields, corn fields, soy fields. They manufacture parts for our jet planes, our tanks, our ships. They could probably stop them at sea by pressing a key on a keyboard. So they've already had Pearl Harbor. That's topic number three. Topic number next. Do you think Trump will build a border wall? That's being contested right now. Do you think Trump will build a border wall? Number five, what do you think Trump will do and what do you think he will not do amongst his promises? The next one is, I'm giving you a lot of topics for today. And this is a real domestic problem. There's a big series of articles today in the San Francisco newspaper about the homeless problem. You know, typical hand-wringing liberals, homeless project, and no easy path to ending 10 cities. And they show the poor homeless crack addicts in the streets. And we're supposed to have pity for these people, these bums, these wastrels who urinate and crap in the street. And so I have no sympathy for drug addicts. I have no sympathy for bums. I have no sympathy for people who abuse the kindness of a city population, urinate, defecate in the streets, won't go into shelters, think that they have the power to control their own lives when they've already shown they have no power over their lives, will not listen to the authorities, defy the police, insult pedestrians. What are the solutions to the homeless problems? There are no solutions, just hand-wringing like the San Francisco newspaper would say. Of course there are solutions. You have mentally deranged people who belong in mental hospitals. That's 50% of the population in the streets. You then have about 25% who are escaped prisoners who are living in the streets who belong back in prison. They're hiding. You then have 25% of people who need to be put into work camps so they can work and work and be taken care of by the taxpayers. What is wrong with that proposal? The streets could be cleaned of the homeless in 90 days. 25% go into prison. 25% go into mental hospitals. And whatever the percentage is of able-bodied people who are simply living in the streets because they prefer it, they go to work camps and they work for society. Society then in return gives them shelter, gives them housing, that is a roof over their heads. They all want a house, by the way. If you interview the homeless people, they don't just want a free apartment. They want a whole house, probably on Pacific Heights. They'd like to live in Nancy Pelosi's house or Dianne Feinstein's house, which I think is a pretty good idea, by the way. I think that there should be a law passed requiring the liberals who have kept the homeless in the gutters to take them into their houses for a week at a time. Then we may have a solution to the homeless problem. So how would you, the listeners to this show across America, faced with this scourge that we've lived with most of the last 30 years, how would you solve the, quote, homeless problem? First of all, the word homeless itself is a lie. Homeless implies that everyone is entitled to a home. Can you tell me where it is written in the Bible or the U.S. Constitution or the Bill of Rights that we're entitled to a home? Show me where it's written. It's written nowhere. The last time I remember, you had to earn your home or you had to pay your rent. What do you mean homeless? There's another word for it, but it's not homeless. And that means that we have to get a little tougher on this issue. Not softer, not hand-wringing, not conversations, not intellectual discussions, but law and order. And we need to clean the streets up because it's gotten out of hand. That's another topic. There's another few topics that I haven't even gotten to yet, so here's one of them. I read a heartbreaking story this morning that I think will touch anyone with a conscience, and that is something about dead birds. I say, well, we eat birds. Why should I care? Well, listen to this one. Thousands of snow geese die after landing on Superfund site. Thousands of white snow geese died after landing in a toxic open pit mine while trying to escape a Montana snowstorm. The 700-acre Berkeley pit, which is overseen by Montana Resources and Atlantic Richfield Company in Butte, Montana, is laced with arsenic, iron, zinc and sulfuric acid from 27 years of copper mining. The mine closed in April of 1982 and became a Superfund cleanup site the following year. According to witnesses who spoke with the Associated Press, the pit looked like 700 acres of white birds. Roughly 10,000 geese landed in the toxic waters on November 28th, and many of them died. They died because we have criminals in the business world who have created hazardous waste without cleaning it up. And this is why we need very, very strong environmental laws. Now, I realize that Trump picked a leading EPA critic to lead the agency. He picked Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt to lead the EPA, which is a good thing. It's a very good thing. However, I will sit here on my pulpit in front of this microphone and say to you that if we go back 70 years and we erase all the environmental laws, we'll be committing a crime against the earth and against our animal friends. We should not do that. We cannot go backwards in order to go forwards. Yes, the EPA is an agency, frankly, that doesn't really need to exist. But we cannot let people have free reign over the airs, waters, and places. Or I will remind you of something that perhaps you have forgotten. Many of you didn't understand the early days of the ecology movement, which is almost quaint by today's standards. I've been a lifetime conservationist, but I'm not an environmentalist. There's a huge difference. Environmentalists use the animals and the airs, waters, and places as political tools to advance a socialist worldwide agenda. A conservationist is something quite different. And so we must protect our innocent animal friends. We must not poison them. We must not turn our bays into sludge, our air into soot-filled landscapes. We must not rape our forests. I am very much like Teddy Roosevelt in that regard. And so I say to you, be very careful now that we have the opposite to Obama in the presidency in some ways, and we have people coming into very high positions who are the opposite of the so-called progressives who Obama appointed. In some cases, that is a good thing. It's a very good thing. The more I look at Trump, the more I realize by his appointments, he is very much a fiscal conservative and a security conservative. And I know he's meeting with liberals. I understand that. That's a very smart thing to do. Carson at HHS, Ben Carson, remember he's in charge of HHS. That's, I believe, the welfare system comes in under them. Very socially conservative, Carson, good man. All the guys he's appointing in national security, terrific people. But we have to be very careful that we don't erase laws that protect our little friends with wings and fins and fur from the rapacious vermin who would kill them all off for a dollar's profit. So those are the questions. That's the opening. The phone number is 855-400-7282. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Obama lied about his legacy. I mean, he said, okay, they didn't attack on our land. That doesn't mean people didn't die from Muslim terror attacks, does it? They see, it's parsing the truth. He's a lawyer by training, but he used the law to learn how to lie. He didn't use the law to learn how to give justice. There's a big difference in using the law not to arrive at the truth. Believe me, there's no relationship between the law and truth. That I know. But there is justice related to the law. But when you study law and learn how to lie to people, you become president like Obama did. He's lying when he says there have been no Muslim terror, Islamic terror attacks. He didn't even say Islam again. Again, no Islam. No foreign terrorist organization has successfully planned and executed an attack on our homeland. What does he mean by that? France didn't attack us. Israel didn't attack us. We had no Italian attacks. Again, he won't say Islam or Muslim. To this day, he gets away with the big lie because of Jake Tapper. Because of all the people that are suddenly in love with Trump. But, to me, emotionally, what I'd rather talk about today is not Obama's lie. Soon he'll be gone for a while anyway. I don't know where he's going to end up. God forbid he goes to the UN. God forbid he goes to the UN. He's a young man yet. He can do a lot of damage. Tremendous. Look how long Castro lived into his 90s. Continuing to push the purest Marxist agenda. This one's just getting warmed up. The homeless problem bothers me a lot. It's hand-wringing, it's liberalism, it's phonies in the media who make believe they have sympathy for them that keep the bums on the streets. They're dangerous, and there needs to be a solution to the problem of bums in the streets. And they're not finding the solution. All their answers are wrong. So I'll ask you, the people who have to step over the urine and the needles and put up with their insults and their assaults, what would you do to solve the problem of bums in the streets?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282.
You know, I read a story like this. Thousands of snow geese die after landing on a Superfund site. And not only does it rip my guts out, but it makes me so angry I become white with rage. I'd like to find the people who created this open pit mine. I'd like to find them. I'd like to see them tried. I'd like to see them hung in public for doing this to the earth and to these poor birds. Now you say, oh, you're just a soft liberal. I know the stupidity out there. I know the bumptious idiocies of the idiots who think that they're big tough men because they eat a chicken. If you don't understand that you are the eagle, you understand nothing. When it was found that the eggs of the eagle were being destroyed by DDT because the shells were too thin to support the gestation and birth of the bird, and it was threatened that the eagle would die off, it means that within the chain, the ecological chain of life, we are the eagle. Do you understand that? It was only by understanding that when the birds were dying, that we were going to be dying next. Where do you think this epidemic of cancer is coming from? Do you think it's coming from the air? It is. It's coming from the air, water, and places. Meaning the food we eat, the air we breathe, the water we drink. It's filled with toxins. I've spent my entire life studying this, warning about this. And you think that in this day and age, 2016, you wouldn't see thousands of snow geese dying after landing on a Superfund site. I want to take a call on this subject. I know there are other topics that are more important to you, but I think that with the election of Donald Trump, we have to be very, very careful that we don't go in the 180-degree opposite direction in all spheres. Oh, in the sphere of national security, we need 180. We need a 180 turn. In the sphere of so many social policies, we need 180. We need complete turns of the ship. But when it comes to protecting all of the creatures on this planet. We're protecting ourselves, and we must be careful we don't go back 100 years and make the mistakes that were made before, okay? WJR, Dave, you are involved with the wildlife story and somehow?
Dr. Savage, kudos, and you blow me away with your knowledge of this and your take on it. I agree with you 1,000,000%. I spent my life going to Alaska and the remote places. I can't even tell you. 2 months ago, the group I belong to just bought 200 acres in the Yak Valley. That's northwest Montana, bordering Idaho, to preserve properties like cougars and grizzly bears. They can't speak, and when they roam from private parcels to public parcels and this kind of thing, that's when it gets in trouble. So acquiring through easements and gifts and grants and other things like this, this group out of Missoula, Montana.
No, it's a great group. I know I've read of people who have bought hundreds of acres in the Amazon basin to protect the pristine rainforest from the rape that is going on down there. And then you see 400-year-old mahogany trees being cut down for lumber. 400-year-old majestic mahogany trees in the Brazilian basin, the Amazon basin. And then you look at, do you know how many different, you of all people would know, how many different species live on one mahogany tree in the middle of the Amazon jungle? Probably 1,000 different species live on that one tree. They also lose their home. And so we have to be very cautious when we suddenly say, oh, cut it down, it's just wood. I love those attitudes. Now, are you an expert at all on the snow geese migrations? Do you know anything about how far they fly?
No, but I am on Montana, and that's why when you brought out the story, it blew me away, because the governor was up for re-election and the different things that it would impact. You were spot on, and I'm going to get on that, by the way. The Community Forest Program, I would like you to look up, because it's a new...
I like that you're doing good work. I love it. Just give the email, and then we're going to move on, because I don't want to lose the audience, which would be losing the forest for the trees. I know how to run a national show, and I got to stick to the big picture here. Let me tell everyone listening to this show about the loss of thousands of snow geese dying by landing by mistake into what they thought was a pond of water, but they didn't know that it was a Superfund site filled with arsenic, iron, zinc, and sulfuric acid after 27 years of copper mining, and thousands of these beautiful, majestic snow geese died after landing there to get away from a snowstorm. Now, do you know how far these geese fly? Have you ever seen any movie, any film, any video of these geese? Do you know how majestic they are? Do you know how many thousands of miles they fly in their migration? Have you ever seen their faces as they're flying over mountain ranges and how they have to marshal every ounce of their energy? Every last mitochondria in their body must be marshaled to get them over the humps of some mountains on their migration. They're one of the most magnificent animals on the planet. And then what? They land in a toxic sump, and then they all die. And this is man's foolishness. So we have to go back to one of the great protectors of our land, and that was Teddy Roosevelt. Many of you know Teddy Roosevelt, you know, the militant Teddy Roosevelt, the Bunker Hill, and the fact that he was a populist. It's a very interesting story. But Teddy Roosevelt was so touched by the wildlife. Now, he was a hunter, by the way. He was no fading little violet. But he realized that if man was not controlled in his rapaciousness, he would annihilate every living creature on the planet, kill them all, turn every lake and every river into a sewer if he was not controlled. So Teddy Roosevelt was our first conservationist president. He also created the first national parks. In that regard, he is a great, great man for that alone, and we must remember his important lessons, especially in this day and age when you see animals dying because of mismanagement. So that's why I wanted to point this out on a show that's largely not about this subject, you know what I'm saying? Now, especially on a day like December 7th when we are talking about other things, war, Japanese attack us at Pearl Harbor, we lose almost 3,000 men, that leads us to war with Japan, World War II, etc., which culminates in two atomic bombs, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and the loss of hundreds of thousands of Japanese lives, and we all have talked about that, and the calculus was that had Truman not authorized the dropping of those bombs, 1 million American men would have died taking the homeland islands. That's just a horrible reality of what it was about. That was the whole story. He calculated as a result of Okinawa and how ferociously the Japanese warriors fought to the last man, virtually to the last man. Very few survived that. It's funny, we're talking about that when I saw the movie Hacksaw Ridge a few weeks ago and was so moved by it. One of the finest movies that I've seen in my lifetime. Awesome, just over the top awesome. Mel Gibson's great war movie, Hacksaw Ridge. You have to see that movie. You must see that movie. It's about a man, I'm getting a little sidetracked here, I forget his name, pardon me. He was a Seventh-day Adventist who was very patriotic, wanted to join the military because his friends in Georgia, where he came from, were all, you know, men of that time, and they all enlisted. He didn't want to be seen as a cop-out. So he went and recruited. He said, I'll recruit, but I won't carry a gun and I won't kill. So that was a huge story at that time. Anyway, he saves, I think, 70 men single-handedly on one of the ridges in Okinawa, one of the worst battles in history, without a gun. He goes back and rescues them. He gets a Medal of Honor. So he's the first conscientious objector to have won the Medal of Honor. Great story. But the point is, the number of Japanese that died on Okinawa, defending it from their point of view, the number of Americans who were butchered and died from our point of view, indicated to the war leaders that that was an indicator of how hard they would fight to hold on to the main Japanese mainland if the Americans were to try to take it by assault. So we had the atomic bombs in their state of birth, really, and Truman authorized dropping them. Horrible story, yes, but it was a calculus at that time of better them than us. And we are going to come to the same calculus, possibly in our lifetime, with a different sort of individual, and that would be the Islamic fanatics. And I've said it before, I don't even want to talk about that today. It got me in trouble once to the point that I'm banned from entering England for daring to ask the very question I'm going to ask you today. It was a theoretical question. And here it is. All I said in 08 or 09 was, if an Islamic terrorist organization got their hands on a nuclear weapon or a nuclear device and threatened to set it off somewhere in the United States of America, would you rather see a million of us die or a million of them die? Well, the vermin in England and the vermin in the media twisted what I just asked into me saying something I didn't say. But the question remains, the same question remains. And we may have to face it in our lifetime. Don't assume that the Islamic terrorists are gone just because Obama has told you that they haven't conducted a successful attack on our land. I read you a long list. A lengthy list of attacks by Islamic terrorists on our soil. Oh, they didn't blow up a World Trade Center. I get that. Is that what he was trying to suggest? Is that all he was saying? Well, he was parsing the truth. There were still many attacks that could have been prevented had we not had a doofus moron running the Department of Homeland Security who was never qualified to be the head of the DHS, never should have been confirmed, never should have had the job. Jay Johnson is a complete and total fraud. A Wall Street lawyer, a pacifist, a left-wing fanatic has run DHS into the ground. Thank God I woke up this morning and saw that Obama is gone and Trump is here. And Trump has selected a retired general, an actual great American general, to run DHS. I will sleep better at night. And I can guarantee you the rats are going to run back into their little holes when they realize that a real man is in charge of DHS and they just might be taken out of their little rat holes and rounded up before they set off a bomb in a schoolyard or before they kill somebody in the streets. I can guarantee you there's going to be a muscular attack upon all of the terrorists who are hiding in this country within the next 6 months, and they know it. There's going to be a lot of flights out of this country before you even... You just look at the manifests. Boy, if I were in charge of this, I'd watch the manifest of all the people leaving this country right now for Pakistan, for Afghanistan, any of those regions. I'd make certain that there were some people waiting for them at the exit gate, because these are the people who are on the watch lists right now that have been slipping through a little too often because of lax liberal attitudes and laws. Anyway, so these are not related in some way, and they are related in the other way. And I have to now get you back to the original questions of the show. which I'll do in a minute. But remember, December 7th, 1941, a day that shall live in infamy. I don't want to play the FDR tape. You know, it's too obvious. I think what I'm going to play is one of my favorite military songs, which is the Victory at Sea intro by Richard Rodgers. I grew up on watching this TV show, Victory at Sea. I love the music. And I loved watching the ships, mainly ships, warships, of course, as they, I don't know if you want to use the exact right word, as they careened through the sea. Not sailed over the sea, but careened. And if you've been a boater, you know what I'm talking about. I once did this before. I love it. It's great. That music is terrific music to narrate from. But we're getting all the warnings. And whether this government is capable of even seeing the warnings is a question that is worthy of debate. And once Mr. Trump becomes ensconced in the presidency and is president, and once the new leader of the military, the new leader of the Pentagon, the new leader of Homeland Security, the new leader of the CIA, God knows who the new FBI leader, I can't wait to hear who he's going to make the head of the FBI after this fiasco with Hillary's emails. But once these true hard men are put in place, this will be a great America to live in again. We will have pride in knowing that the people who work for us are working for us to protect us rather than to protect the people who would harm us.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
All right, famous speech on the order of a Churchillian speech. We've all heard it. It still resonates with us. And we're still waiting for a leader to appear who has the magnificence of this type of presidency. We know he was a socialist. We understand that. But he was able to marshal the nation in a war that we almost lost. Many of you don't know that we almost lost World War II. In the early days, we were greatly unprepared. Terribly unprepared because of people like John Kerry, Barack Obama, Wolf Blitzer, Jake Tapper, Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein. You name the list of every enemy of America in your mind. They existed in the 1930s. They were the ones who did not want us to be ready to fight a war. They are the ones who right now do not want us to be ready to fight a war. They have denuded the military not only of its necessary parts to even fight wars, but of the spirit to fight a war. And so in many ways, there is a comparison between December 6th, 1941, and December 7th, 2016. This is the Savage Nation. Many topics. I will return.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Obama lies about his legacy, no question mark. How do you fix the bum problem? Do you think Trump will build a border wall? What do you think Trump will or will not do? Snow geese, why we need very strong environmental laws to protect our animal friends. College forces students to pass tests on gender violence before class enrollment. Now, maybe this stuff will go away, after about a year of the Trump administration. Maybe the sickos who are running these courses will be driven into obscurity. Kirkwood Community College, whatever that is requiring students to take an online course on gender violence and pass a test on it before they can register for their spring semester classes. Those who do not complete the program will have a hold placed in their account that will block their ability to enroll in future courses until the program has been completed. The Iowa-based college states on its website, adding students must achieve a score of at least 75 to pass. The Not Anymore Gender Violence Prevention Requirement aims to create a respectful, safe, and non-threatening environment for students, faculty, and staff, according to the website. Now, this is classic bullying. This is bullying by the LGBT community, which has gone on far too long. And it's time for the rest of us to stand up to the bullies in the LGBT community, who are no different than any other bullies the world has known or does know. Leave our children alone. Just get your hands off our children and let them learn and stop brainwashing them. From Campus Reform, we read Harvard Law Professor pledges to defend electors who reject Trump. Oh, isn't that brave of him, hiding behind his little tenured position? Who is it? Larry Lessig? Larry Lessig. I wonder what Larry would do in the real world, this Harvard law professor, if he actually had a real job. Pope warns media over the sin of spreading fake news and smearing politicians. You have to understand that the Pope, like Mussolini, was once a journalist. And before he was a journalist, I think he was a bouncer. And so I don't take this Pope very seriously when it comes to policy issues. And I understand that there are millions of true believers who are offended by my even questioning the authority of the bouncer. But when I saw the Pope venturing into areas of which he knew nothing about, such as so-called global warming, and he wrote one fallacious statement after another, and I try to counter it in Government Zero with my long story on the actual science, citing evidence such as the Vostok ice core samples in my book, I've been watching this Pope, and I've been puzzled how any Catholic with a high school education can take him seriously. So listen to what this nut has now done. Media that focus on scandals and spread fake news to smear politicians risk becoming like people who have a morbid fascination with excrement, Pope Francis said in an interview published on Wednesday. He sounds like he's becoming more senile by the day. Francis told the Belgian Catholic Weekly that spreading disinformation was probably the greatest damage that the media can do, and using communications for this rather than to educate the public amounted to a sin. Using precise psychological terms, the Pope said scandal-mongering media risked falling prey to coprophilia or arousal from excrement, and consumers of these media risked coprophagia or eating excrement. I'm quoting him now. The Argentine-born bouncer excused himself for using such terms in order to get his point across while answering a question about the correct use of the media. The bouncer said, I think the media have to be very clear, very transparent, and not fall into, no offense intended, the sickness of coprophilia. That is always wanting to cover scandals, covering nasty things, even if they are true, he said. And since people have a tendency towards the sickness of coprophagia, a lot of damage can be done. So the Pope is now obsessing on excrement in order to push his agenda. I just thought you should know about it, that's all. Let me take some calls. I've touched on a lot of topics in the last hour. We got homeless people waiting, animal lovers waiting, homelessness issue, protection of the environment issue, the Trump issue, all of that stuff. And I would invite you to call, but I'm sorry there are no open lines. Robert, my normal board operator, had to go home. He got the flu. And Jim Verdi is on the board, which is a very tough job. And sitting in on the calls is a good guy, tremendous guy in Dallas, Joey Salvi. I hope you don't mind me mentioning your name, Joey. Do you mind? You're now famous, Joey. I know you were famous before, but Joey is taking your calls. And it's nice to see that we have such good people inside the studio there in Dallas holding down the fort. Where are we? Okay, let's go to some of these great callers. Alicia Online, line 5. Go ahead, please. What's your topic, Alicia?
Well, first of all, I wanted to tell you, Dr. Savage, I've been listening to you for the last several months. I'm a pharmaceutical rep out on the road, and you are so intellectually attractive. I've never heard a man that has the kind of insights and the way your brain works. It's just so attractive, and as a single lady, I wish that I could find a man out there that is like that, that thinks like you do.
That's a funny quote. Alicia, this is from too many days on the road alone, I'm telling you. It's too many isolated nights in motels and in the car in the cold. So, you know, got to be careful. This is a phenomenon of the loneliness of the roads. I don't think that I'm the perfect person that you think I am.
Oh, I just love the way, the way your mind works. I've been a Trump supporter from day one. I remember I live in Las Vegas right now, but I'm from Chicago, and I'm going to move back. You know, when he was out in Las Vegas, I got tickets and I brought my dad, and I'm so glad I did, because that's like so historical, you know, to be able to attend that. That was
well, especially with your father. That's something that you will remember for the rest of your life.
Exactly. And my parents at that time did not know who they were going to support, because this was before he was.
So, Alicia, no, let's get back to your primary point about how great I am. Look, you got to understand that radio is a magical medium where you can imagine what the person is like, imagine what they look like, imagine how they are. But what you're really referring to is how I use my mind, I think, more than anything, correct?
Yes, it's very sexy. Very sexy.
That's funny.
Are you?
Well, I'm sure that my dog would agree with you. Teddy finds me to be very attractive. But listen, Alicia, let me ask you a question. How much does a pharmaceutical rep make these days on the road?
These days, not much. Actually, I'm contract, so it's not much at all. Actually, I have a business that I launched a few years ago.
Doesn't a pharmaceutical rep go around like and show drugs to doctors that they should prescribe?
Yeah, we do. But you know, what they're going to is now they're hiring contract people, so they don't have.
What is the number one drug being pushed to doctors these days?
Well, I can't say the one that I have right now, which I think is.
Oh, you represent a certain company. I see what it is. It's not like you have a bag of different medications to show them. It's only one. So you're a detailer for a certain company.
Exactly. And
well, look, since it's a funny call to begin with, and I don't want to, you know, I do want to anyway. I'm very curious. Does Pfizer still use representatives to sell their little blue pill to doctors?
You know, I would assume so. I mean, I don't work for Pfizer, but I would assume so. And I do know that a company came out called Sprouts, and they are actually selling little pink pills for women now. So check that out.
Well, so the question would be is who would detail the little blue pills and who would detail the little pink pills to doctors? I would imagine they'd have to use attractive women to sell the blue pill to doctors and attractive men to sell the little pink pill to doctors. Is that what they do or not?
I would have, yeah, that's pretty much like one of the doctors I work with say, you know, all pharmaceutical reps are beautiful, so.
All right, I think we've had our fun, but look, nobody is who you think they are, number one. And, you know, at the end of the day, our feet are made of clay to begin with. But number two, you ever read the book Miss Lonely Hearts? It was a novel, an obscure novel written in the 1920s or 30s. It was written by who? Who wrote the Miss Lonely Hearts? It's about a radio person. And people listen to him and think that he's something, you know. And it's all about that, I believe. It's about idolizing people. You should never idolize human beings because at the end of the day, what are we? What are we at the end of the day? Who are we at the end of the day? Nathaniel West, The Day of the Locust, Nathaniel West. I'd recommend you read The Day of the Locust, but I'm going to send you Teddy and Me by Michael Savage for the holidays. It's a beautiful book. It's really not political. It'll bring a smile to your lips.
I would love that, and you know what? I have 3 Cocker Spaniels of my own, and actually I created a brand of products on my own.
Okay, I can't let you plug it. Just stay on the line. Cannot promote products. on this show that are not advertisers, because advertisers pay a fortune to get their message out to the public. Okay, let's go to the callers on the other topics, not to do with romanticizing the stone. I didn't say romancing the stone. Romanticizing the stone is pretty good. Jim likes that. We're trying to have a good time in radio today. I mean, we're trying to relax a little bit here. So let's go to someone on a very easy topic, the issue of homelessness. Chris on WVNN was homeless. Chris, how would you solve the homeless problem?
Well, hi, my name is Chris. I was homeless extensively through most of the 1980s through until the late 90s. And during that time, I was also rotating in and out of shelters and numerous incarcerations. And I knew I experienced firsthand the hopelessness of the situation personally, and also seen it in the lives of many persons.
I understand that people who are down and out are helpless. I get that. And a society has to help the helpless people. But at what point do you stop worrying about them and start worrying about the effects they are having on the people who are trying to go about their daily business? Don't you think that we, the people who pay the taxes, have a right to clean streets and nonviolent streets?
Exactly. The number one hindrance to me, or the shortcoming I had, was a lot of the liberal philosophy that was being encouraged for me to accept and to live out. And
oh, in other words, to keep you homeless, to keep you in the streets. They wanted you to stay there because you fed the welfare system.
Yeah, I'm not...
Okay, so let me ask you something. If the state were to create shelters for you, would you stay in them?
I wouldn't now, but at that time...
Well, why is it that we keep reading about homeless people who say, no, I'm not going to go in a shelter. I'd rather live under a freeway ramp. Why should they have that choice?
Well, probably because the shelters have their rules and their stipulations that you have to be...
That's right, and they're not allowed to use their crack. They're not allowed to use their meth. And so they'd rather sit under a freeway ramp and defecate in a mailbox and use their crack and their other stuff. And so I'm saying it's time to crack down and stop letting them dictate how they should live. They have no right to live that way. They're breaking the law, and they're violating the law, and they're violating the civil codes, and it's time to stop wringing our hands over the problem. If you got a shelter, put them in it. They don't want to go in a shelter, put them in a prison. You can't take care of them in a prison, put them in a mental hospital. Clean them up. Clean them up. Make them do something for society. You know, there's a whole series of articles in the San Francisco newspaper showing these people as though they're heroes. It's unbelievable. Here she is, Millie, in her tent, using her crack pipe. Why are they glorifying them?
Right, exactly. I mean, I believe that a lot of the policies, such as the food...
Again, I don't want to lose my message by people who like to distort what I say. A society has an obligation to take care of the unfortunate. It does not mean that we have to bend over backwards to permit the unfortunate to dictate what kind of care they deserve. We have limited resources. We have ample shelters in San Francisco for all of these people who are living on the freeway ramps and in tents. They won't go into them because they'd rather use their drugs and cavort like wild animals in the streets. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Prologue is never good, Jim. It's the loud, banging, symbolic warfare, noise, music. That's what we do with the show. So I got some emails. I'll read one of them. This comes to me from a listener in Portugal, and he listens to the show on the internet, and he just said a few things that are worth repeating. And he said, I'm a 24-year-old student, and I like when Savage talks about God's science, and when he takes callers with problems, which helped me, a 24-year-old student, understand what kind of people are in the world that I'm living in, since we aren't all equal like the regressives try to make us believe. After listening to the Savage Show for 1 year and reading both Government Zero and Scorched Earth, I can see how the rest of my life will be, he says, a struggle for survival in a world ruled by demonic forces, and an inner struggle against my nature in order to synchronize it with the demands of God, and so on. Yeah. And he says, my favorite Dr. Savage quote is the following. When the doors of reality are cleansed, you'll see it as it is. Horrible. I don't even remember some of that. That's pretty good. That comes from the doors of perception. You understand that. But that's true. When you cleanse the doors of reality and you see life as it is, you realize how horrible it really is. And it actually makes you better able to handle life. If you run around with rose-colored glasses, as the liberals would have you wear, or the progressives would have you wear, constantly telling you about this perfect world that never existed, that never can exist, you're not going to be a very happy person ever, not for one second. And that brings us right back to the problems of the world, mainly the problem of the bums in the streets, which you called homeless. It's a misnomer, and by the way, the word itself, homeless, is a creation of the radical left. That's an implication, which is that we owe housing to everyone. We do not. We owe care to everyone. But that means a minimal amount of care. Not Nancy Pelosi's mansion on Pacific Heights, nor even a three-bedroom, two-bath house in the suburbs. We owe them no housing. We owe them care.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Think of a 58 Chevy convertible speeding down the connecting highway in Queens, drag racing at night in leather jackets with the cold air in our face. What do I know? It feels so good. The screaming, the yelling. People were different then. It was a different world. I mean, you knew where to walk, where not to walk. You knew how to walk, how not to walk. You knew how to hold yourself, where to hold yourself. You knew when to hold. You knew when to fold. And you wake up in a time where people are still trying to figure it all out. I mean, it's neither here nor there. It's not that profound. I'm just rapping to you like a guy in a street corner right now. Because that's what I feel like doing, just standing on a street corner rapping. It's holiday time. People are wrapping themselves up and wrapping up gifts and wrapping up families, wrapping up selves, wrapping up boxes within boxes to unravel the boxes within the boxes. Within the boxes of the boxes, finding nothing but the emptiness of the box itself. This is what we're doing in December. And it's very hard to focus on the big policies. And we're remembering we just won an election. You know, and I know, the world is a different world. You and I know that, no, not all of Donald Trump's statements or meetings are going to please all the people all of the time. But as Abe Lincoln said, you can't fool all the people all the time, you know, et cetera. But, you know, you can't please all of the people all of the time either. That's an important reversal of what Abe said. But if you look at the appointments in the important areas, speaking politically now, and I'll get back to rock and roll and nostalgia in a minute, by his appointments alone, we see Trump is very, very, very much a fiscal conservative, very much a security conservative. And, yeah, he's meeting with Al Gore, and they're doing the this and the that, and he's bringing his enemies into the tower. They're going into the tower. They're going up in the ivory tower. They're coming down in the ivory tower. They're waving to the press. So what? I mean, he's changing his policies. Look who he's appointing. General Mattis, General Flynn. These are good people. These are hard people. These are putting the fear of God into the Islamists amongst us. And if you remember, as near as a few months ago, the FBI was warning us that they had, 1,000 Muslims under surveillance? They didn't say Muslim. We know who we're talking about. You know, we got to mince words in everything we say. They said, we have 1,000 people under surveillance who are potential terrorists. Well, I've said 100 times, that 1,000? 1,000 they're watching? That's a lot of resources to be watching them with. Now, let me ask you something. If you were one of these Islamic terrorists hiding in America, living on welfare, having a real good time, you know, having children, bringing your family over who don't work, spitting on the people in the streets as you see them go by for being so weak and stupid, and then you see that Hillary lost and that this tough guy won, and you know, although he may not build the wall and although he may not make the watch list go where it needs to go, which is viral, you know and I know their life is not going to be the same with this new president. What would you do if you were one of these people who thought that you had victory in your hands and you were about to break the spine of the infidel? Tell me what you'd be doing. You'd be getting a one-way ticket to Krapistan is what you'd be doing as fast as you could. You'd be packing up your whole kit and caboodle. You'd be packing up your whole family, trying to get out of here before the while the getting is still good, because they're going to be rounded up. As sure as I'm standing here, when I see General Flynn and I see who he appointed to Homeland Security, these people are not going to be catered to by the new FBI. They're not going to be catered to by the new CIA. They're not going to be catered to by the new Defense Intelligence Agency. They're not going to be sitting around and waiting for them to kill children. Okay, so they'd be getting out of this country pretty fast, is what I would think. We just saw a terrorist attack at Ohio State University, didn't we? Obama says, oh, we haven't had an attack on our land in 8 years since I'm president. Well, again, he's parsing words. Of course he's parsing words. He's saying he means like there's no 9-11 with a plane hitting a tower. No bomb went off like that. But people died from Islamic terrorists, didn't they? I read you a whole list at the beginning of the show. We don't have to go all the way back to the big ones, you remember? The Boston Marathon bombing, Muslim terrorists. Major Nidal Hassan, why is he not executed? Can you tell me why the man who committed the Fort Hood massacre, executing all those people in cold blood, including a pregnant woman soldier, why is he still living? Why has he not been executed? Why? Because of the Islamophile in the presidency. And I think that when Trump becomes president, not only do we have to start ensuring that Nidal Hassan is executed, but that the people who perpetrated what I talked about yesterday, the execution of all of those Navy SEALs in that helicopter. Did you remember that call yesterday? If you were listening, I choked up. I don't know if you know that. I was talking about various topics, and I got a call from Mr. Strange, whose son was one of the Navy SEALs who was on that helicopter that was sent to its fiery death. The helicopter died. The men on it died. It was the entire SEAL Team 6 that had killed Osama bin Laden. Why were they killed? Who executed them? Mr. Strange and his wife were driving in a car, and they heard the show, and they called the show. They had called the show years ago when this first happened. And I lobbied, others lobbied. We couldn't believe that there was no investigation of this tragedy. Why were all those SEALs put on a slow-flying Vietnam-era Chinook helicopter when we have more modern fast attack helicopters? Why were they not broken up into four teams instead of one team? Why were they not put into four helicopters with helicopters to protect them? Why were they put into one slow-flying helicopter and sent into that Tangi Valley? Why? They were sent to their deaths. And so we asked on this show, who ordered this? Who in the military command ordered it? There's still no answer. Even though there were congressional hearings by the useless idiots in the Republican Party, maybe there's Chaffetz, another one. All these hearings spent millions of dollars on all this stupid stuff, and they got nowhere. We still don't know who ordered that helicopter into the Tangi Valley. Who? Who in the military gave the command? There is a command structure, isn't there? How hard is it would be for Donald Trump to find out, okay, who was in charge of that? Who was in charge of that order? Lieutenant X or Colonel Y? Okay, who's his boss? Okay, Colonel Schmendrick. Who was Colonel Schmendrick's boss? General Schmeltz. Who's General Schmeltz's boss? Just go down the list. In 3 minutes, you can find out who ordered that. You call them all in and you tell me right now, I want to know who ordered that helicopter into that valley. I want him to report to me in 15 minutes. You can get to the bottom of this pretty quickly. You don't need committee hearings by congressmen and senators who are just doing it for grandstanding. And I would hope that with the help of the organizations that are helping these parents of these dead SEALs, we do find out who sent these men to their deaths. And when they are found out, I hope that they're tried and they are found guilty of high treason, and they're executed in public for having done this to all of these men. Do you know how many men were killed in that helicopter? Do you know what it must have been like for them? How about their parents? The Stranges, those are the folks whose son, Michael Strange, died with his buddies in the SEALs. They were coming back. I wish we had the call right now. You have to hear it. Jim, could you find that call? I got to play it in this hour. They were coming back yesterday from Arlington National Cemetery, where they had laid flowers on the graves of all these young boys and men who were killed that day. Their bodies blown to pieces in that helicopter. It didn't have to happen. They were sent to their deaths by somebody in the U.S. command structure, or somebody in the Oval Office did this to them. And we've talked about why. Many people say, well, why would they do that? What, are you crazy? Sounds like a conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy theory. It was an unheard of loss. And so we have a new defense secretary, General James Mattis. Why we don't lobby him when he becomes defense secretary is not even a question, because we will, for answers to this travesty and tragedy. And we're going to find out who did this, because the parents deserve to know, in honor of their fallen sons. It's that simple. But there are so many other things that need to be done after this. These 8 years of a slow-burning terror against everything decent in this country. And so, do we have that, Jim? Did you find it from yesterday? Were you looking? I don't even know if he's looking for it. You are still searching. Oh, we don't have it now. Maybe we'll have it later. The show just evolves as it evolves. I don't plan everything. I plan the topics. Obama lying about his legacy. We played clip 22, the coming war with China, clip 1, which you haven't played. How do you fix the homeless problem? Do you think Trump will build a border wall? What do you think Trump will or will not do? Snow geese, why we need environmental laws. I mean, I've touched on a lot of different topics. And, you know, I just drifted into this one, you know. Let's go to some of the callers. Kurt, KSFO, San Francisco. Kurt, I don't answer how I am. What's your topic?
My topic is a little bit, kind of touching on everything you talked about a little bit earlier.
Make it 1 point, not 10. What's your main point? Number one, what's the thing that's really bothering you? What's your pebble in the shoe? Fire away. Go ahead. Launch the torpedo of sound.
Absolutely. Well, I would agree 100% with you on environmental issues of, you know, water, pollution, stuff like that. I'm about 60 miles away from Hanford nuclear site, which kind of ties into Pearl Harbor and Japan and the bombings. And
all right, but you're too fuzzy in your call making. There must be something that caused you to call the show and wait so long. What is the number one topic I talked about that got you to call the show?
To be honest with you, every day I want to call in. I think you touch a lot of our hearts.
Well, what about the thousands of snow geese who died after landing on the Superfund site? Did that bother you?
Absolutely it did. Absolutely it did.
All right. And well, it bothered me very much because these are magnificent animals. 10,000 birds are migrating. And they try to get out of a snowstorm in Montana. And they land on what they think is a small body of water. But instead it is a Superfund site, filled with arsenic, iron, zinc, and sulfuric acid from 27 years of copper mining. And thousands of these geese die a horrible death in that toxic water. And if you know the magnificence of these long-flying migratory creatures, you understand what a loss this is I can't say to mankind, because most people who are hard don't understand this. They think that because they eat a chicken, therefore, it's okay to see 10,000 snow geese die in a toxic swamp. They don't understand the difference between the snow geese and the chicken, the domestic chicken. That's a problem of a lack of education. And I've heard so many people who pretend to be conservatives laugh at environmental laws or laugh at the abuse of animals. It makes me sick, frankly. It makes me very sick for this behavior, because the behavior is based upon cowardice and stupidity. There is a huge, huge need to educate people who are so-called conservatives to understand that one of the principles of conservatism is to conserve and protect. And that means protect the environment. That means to protect our airs, waters, and places. And that means that when 10,000 snow geese die in a toxic wasteland like this, it means that we have to punish the people who let it sit like that. That's what it means, and we must make sure that this doesn't happen again. But we need to punish those who let this pit sit there like that, because the geese are dead, and we don't want more of these wild things to die. Now, it's the same story with the deforestation of vast tracts of land. I know many of you say, it's just wood. Cut it all down. Cut down those redwood trees. Stupid. Stupid. Years ago, when I was first a local host in San Francisco, we had big arguments about the last stands of virgin redwood trees in Northern California. And many stupid people who thought that they were conservatives and thought they were tough guys on the telephone would say, cut them down, it's just wood. Turn them into decks. Turn them into picnic tables. Turn trees that are thousands of years old into picnic tables. That's very advanced thinking. That's super consciousness. That's the kind of super consciousness that is akin to the Superfund toxic dumps that exist in America. It's toxic thinking from toxic minds that are based upon Lilliputian thinking. No, we have to grow in our thinking, especially those of us who just elected Donald Trump. We cannot fall into the dangerous place of saying, good, now we can throw away all that has come before him. That is the worst mistake you can possibly make. And I'll explain further today and tomorrow, right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Today's show is sort of a potpourri. I only have 2 minutes left in this hour, then another hour. Many of the stations leave it after 2 hours. But look what I have waiting here. I have a woman in Jacksonville who wants her son to hook up with Alicia, the pharmaceutical detail. She says he's a smart son, so she wants to make a marriage. I got people calling and saying that SEAL Team 6 had bullet holes in their head and were cremated to cover up the murder. And Kevin on KSFO has 1 minute to tell us what he has to say right now on the Savage Nation.
Michael, what a day of remembrance. I'm a first-time caller. Thank you. I'm a son of a Marine Raider, South Pacific and Saipan and Chini, and my dad fought, and also Guam. And, you know, just a really proud son. But I've always wanted to say that to you. But more importantly, think about these homeless people in San Francisco and all over. I'm from Northern California. And these people get about a $1,900 check every month, and about $1,800 goes to drugs. And all I'm saying is for government money to go to drugs, I don't want to say anything more than that because this conversation could get dangerous.
And all right, listen to me. Listen to me. It's why the politicians keep them in the streets. It's why the politicians do not permit the police to enforce the laws which have them stay in shelters. It's why we see bleeding heart liberals in the San Francisco newspaper wringing their hands saying, oh, we can't do anything about the problem. And then they glorify them with all their crack pipes and their meth problems under the freeway ramps. You're suggesting that the money goes right into the hands of the drug dealers, aren't you saying it?
Yeah, man.
Well, Donald Trump seems to like the mayor of the Manila, the president of, Philippines, Duterte, who has quite a track record with this problem. Trump thinks he's a great guy. Something tells me we're going to see a little law and order in America. Something tells me.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture, and here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
The heroes of SEAL Team 6, who were killed under very suspicious circumstances during Obama's reign of terror. What you may not know is that Obama has stonewalled and violated a judge's order to turn over documents in the August 6, 2011 shootdown of the U.S. helicopter called Sign Extortion 17 that killed members of SEAL Team 6 in Afghanistan. Obama violated a judge's order to simply turn over documents in the 2011 shootdown of that helicopter where all these SEALs died. Back when this was a big story, and this was an article on August 2015 by Rowan Scarborough, a great reporter for the Washington Times. He said, on the fourth anniversary of the worst one-day loss of military life in the war on terror, families of the dead say they are aghast that the government will not honor basic requests under the Freedom of Information Act. Now, Donald Trump is an incoming president. We're going to all lobby Donald Trump to reopen this investigation and get to the bottom of it. This is one of the greatest tragedies in modern military history. It's not that their deaths are different than the deaths of any other soldier, sailor, or airman. The difference here is that this entire team was killed at one time. Family suspects SEAL Team 6 crash was inside job. Washington Times, October 2013. Did you hear that headline? Family suspects SEAL Team 6 crash was inside job on worst day in Afghanistan. Questions still haunt the families of Extortion 17, the 2011 helicopter mission in Afghanistan. And the fact of the matter is, the investigative file made available to the Washington Times showed that the helicopter's landing zone was not properly vetted for threats nor protected by gunships, while commanders criticized the mission as too rushed and the conventional Chinook helicopter as ill-suited for a dangerous troop infiltration. Mr. Strange is the father of Michael, who was killed in this crash. He wants the answer to it. Mr. Strange is quoted by saying, somebody was leaking to the Taliban, whose son intercepted communications as a Navy cryptologist. They knew. Somebody tipped them off. There were guys in a tower, guys on the bush line. They were sitting there waiting, and they sent our guys right into the middle of it. Doug Hamburger's son Patrick, an Army Staff Sergeant, also died when the CH-47 Chinook descended to a spot less than 150 yards from where armed Taliban fighters watched from a turret. He asked why the command sent his son into Tangi Valley on that day. Why did they send them into the Tangi Valley toward a hot landing zone in a cargo airship instead of a special ops helicopter? The souped-up choppers, the MH-47 and the MH-60 Black Hawk, which SEAL Team 6 rode the stealth version off to kill Bin Laden, are flown by Night Stalker pilots skilled in fast ground-hugging maneuvers to avoid detection. Why did they use this old, slow-going cargo ship? I mean, if you ask these questions, you've got to assume that so many U.S. servicemen, especially SEALs, were put into this aircraft for one reason. And the families of the dead deserve an answer. Not all the families believe the fact-finding investigation conducted by Army Brigadier General Jeffrey Colt covered all the issues. General Colt, who has since been promoted to Major General, told commanders that his job was not to find fault, and his report did not criticize any person or decision. We will lobby the incoming defense secretary to look into this serious situation. Mr. Strange, a former union construction worker, said, I want people held accountable. A spokesman for U.S. Central Command, which oversees the war and conducted the probe, declined to answer the family's questions and referred a reporter to General Colt's report. Larry Klayman, who runs the nonprofit watchdog group Freedom Watch, has filed suit in U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia against the Pentagon, as well as the Air Force, Army, and Navy. Anyway, you get the picture. It's a big story. It so upset me that I wrote a whole novel on it called A Time for War. It has nothing directly to do with this case, but it affected me deeply. It motivated me to write that novel. WMAL, Greg, go ahead, please. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, hi, Michael. I'm actually a Special Forces officer, and in the Chinook, a couple of the assumptions you're making is the Chinook that they are using was just a normal cargo aircraft. The Chinook that they are on was a Special Forces modified aircraft, most likely flown by Task Force 160. And those aircraft, first of all, Chinooks are not slow-flying aircraft. That's a really bad assumption. They're faster than the Blackhawks.
All right, so why were they all put into a single helicopter?
That is standard. As a Special Forces officer on my ODA and having worked with the SEALs in multiple places around the planet, that is standard. You put a team on intact.
Well, if you say it's standard and all these men died, it means your standard thinking is faulty.
No, it's because you have a specialized mission. If you put four or five aircraft in, your footprint in the sky is much larger. So your detection, the possibility for you to be detected, is even far greater than it is. And a Chinook flown at the right altitude, and trust me, all the pilots, the Task Force 160 pilots that are flying these aircraft, know the right altitude to fly these aircraft at. And a Chinook.
So why is it then that the families of these dead SEALs are so outraged and think that there was a conspiracy? Are they all crazy?
No, it's because they've been told by other people there's something wrong with that. They don't know the truth about the aircraft. They don't know the truth about the mission because most of the service members, especially in the special operations arena, don't talk about their work. They don't talk about it to their wives. They don't talk about it to their family because they basically can't.
And you know, Greg, I think you called me a year ago when I brought this subject up. I remember the call, and I disagreed with you then. And I want to read you what one of the Dead SEALs' fathers said. When you want to fly them into a valley, when you've got hillsides on both sides of it with houses built into the sides of the valley, that is an extremely dangerous mission. The MH, the new model, they've got radar that will pick up an incoming missile or incoming RPG. They're faster. They're quicker on attack. They're more agile. So there was every reason in the world to use the MH that night. What do you say to that?
Well, there's not. I mean, you have to look at the availability of the aircraft. You have to look at a whole bunch of things.
Well, we are looking at the whole bunch of dead.
No, but there's a whole bunch of
dead. Aren't you as a special forces officer... Aren't you at all concerned that all these men died at the same time? Doesn't it strike you as something that's terrible to begin with?
Of course it's terrible. And, you know, I've lost soldiers, I've lost friends, I've lost superiors out on missions. When I was in the southern Philippines, we lost a whole Chinook. All
right, so why was the black box of the helicopter never found?
No, it's not the fault of the aircraft. There was a mission plane that went in there, and this is not a conventional mission.
But I'm asking what the parents asked. Why was the black box of this helicopter never been found?
Probably because the Afghanis on the ground picked it up. That happens a lot. When we have aircraft wrecks, we don't get out there in time. The entire aircraft is scavenged before we get there. That happens very, very often. Thank God we do not have a lot of aircraft down, but... I will also tell you, after 12 and a half years of my special operations, I went to a aviation command, and our Chinooks flew everywhere in Afghanistan and often came back with bullet holes and all kinds of stuff in it. Those are very...
What about the parents asking that the identities of Afghan soldiers on board be released and the government will not release them? They believe that the Afghanis aboard sabotaged the mission. What do you think of that?
Well, now that's possible. You know, whenever you work with indigenous populations, there's always the risk that, you know, you have an insider. You have an insurgent or, you know, a counter-guerrilla or whatever. And that is the risk, and every special operations member knows that there's a risk. We're trained that. You know, we're also trained how to spot this to the best we can, but, people are really good at hiding it, and we do everything we can. But we understand the inherent risk in the mission. I mean, there's numerous times... Yes, I've been on the Blackhawks, and I've been on the Chinooks. And, you know, I was very fortunate to come out unscathed, you know. But we understand...
Well, then some of the other people are saying is that the mission itself was flawed from the beginning. They said that for 3 hours they had been burning holes in the sky. You know what that means, right?
Yeah, I do.
You had Apaches flying around with a lot of noise in the valley. The entire valley knew that there's a mission going on. And then they do an infill on the X or Y, and this element of surprise is now gone. And by the time they've been there for 3 hours and all these helicopters are flying around and bringing in another aircraft like that, they say it was a tactical mistake. You agree with that or disagree with that?
Yeah, no. That's a completely separate issue, and I do agree with that. But talking about the aircraft itself was not the problem. The Chinook was not a 1960 Chinook. They all have new frames, new skin, new electronics, new engines, new transmissions, everything. Everything's new on those aircraft. It looks like a 1960 helicopter because they really haven't...
No, I understand. I think you called before and you corrected my notion that it was an old Vietnam-era helicopter. That's not what I said. It's actually an older helicopter that has been modified many times, and it is a modernized helicopter, but it doesn't change the story of the entire fiasco from the top to the bottom. And I think that you've acknowledged today that there are two possible problems. One, with the Afghanis who were aboard. They will not release their names to this day. And two, the number of aircraft in the sky at that time, which basically signaled the arrival of this aircraft. Mr. Strange, who was on the show yesterday, were you listening yesterday when one of the fallen soldiers' fathers called the show by any chance?
No, I missed that.
Well, during the terrible ceremony, when Mr. Obama went to Dover Air Force Base to console the families, the president leaned over and said to Mr. Strange, "Your son changed America." And Mr. Strange, a construction worker, said, "I grabbed the president by the shoulders and said, I don't need to know about my son. I need to know what happened." So there were 30 funerals as a result of this. And we know that General Colt was the right man to lead the probe. He is a decorated Iraq and Afghanistan veteran and career helicopter pilot. That's a good thing. But the families are still not satisfied, and I'd like to know what you think is motivating them to not be satisfied.
Well, you know, so the military is very slow at conducting their investigations because generally it takes a long time. They're very thorough about it, and when they finish their investigation, providing there's nothing that would remain classified that could possibly have a negative effect on an ongoing operation or a future operation, they put that release. But most of the special operations investigations stay classified for lots of different reasons, because almost everything that they do is linked to some source of information. And so if you release any of it, then you're giving away your future operations, your safety of, you know, your personnel on the ground.
No, wait a minute. What are you giving away? They gave it away when they sent these men to their deaths in a bungled operation. At the very least, even if it was not a conspiracy to send them to their deaths for political reasons, which I'll leave on the side, whoever organized this, I believe, made a grave error here. The men are all dead. They flew this helicopter into a firefight with the noise of Apache attack helicopters, AC-130 gunships, and drones above them telling everyone in the valley that a military operation was on the way. That seems like a bungled decision.
Now, there's other different types of missions. And one of the missions that we do is called a direct action mission. And you could have support like that going on. And the idea is the team goes in and they do a very deliberate. So when they went after Osama bin Laden, that was a direct action mission. It was a very deliberate, organized mission, and it had a lot of support with it. But they were able to get in mostly and get out. They actually left the helicopter there. Those things do.
Well, I disagree with something you're saying again. They sent the wrong force in for this mission, according to what I'm reading. They say a reactionary force is sent in as a rescue, meaning our guys are in trouble and you send them in. You don't send a reaction force in to stop a group of the enemy escaping out the backside of the village, especially in a dangerous valley and a dangerous entry like they were doing. So can you answer that, please?
Yeah, so you use the forces that are available. Now, years ago, I actually wrote my master's thesis when I was at Command General Staff College.
I think it's very important that you stay on the line, Greg, and I hope you do. I would assume you're colonel or above. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Would you please stay on the line, because I need to clear this up as best we can, and I'll return and take your call in a minute right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Well, here's an old story that's coming up on this day of remembrance of Pearl Harbor that has nothing to do with World War II. It's about the death of all these SEALs in Afghanistan on the extortion mission. And some members of the families of the men who died think that the Americans were betrayed by the Afghan government, to someone tipped off the Taliban. We have to go back to Colonel Larry on line 4. Colonel, please summarize your position if you are kind enough to do so.
Let me on the show. I have relative friends that are in the military. This is the talk. The talk is, when they go on a mission, they split up in two helicopters like they did with Osama bin Laden. Two helicopters. They pack all these men with the SEAL team dog in one helicopter. Now, when this helicopter was taking off from its point, another helicopter spotted this band with RPGs, and they said, "We see a threat." And they were told to stand down. Okay? And so they were told to stand down. The RPG hit the helicopter. It crashed, and some of the SEAL team members were outside the helicopter. And then when they found the bodies, they were executed back of the head with either a pistol or a rifle. And then the bodies were cremated immediately. And this is from military people who are friends and relatives. Okay, that's the thing. When they go with two helicopters like they did with Osama bin Laden. They pack them in one helicopter with the dog. That's what I have to say.
Well, I have reports. I have a copy of a summary of the report from Colonel Colt. And in it, crash investigators interviewed the top leadership of the Joint Special Ops Task Force that put together the mission. And they asked them about the manifest. And the manifest was not accurate. And they have no answers as to who the seven Afghan soldiers were and why the manifest was inaccurate. So there are many questions that need to be answered, Larry. And I believe that when General Mattis becomes defense secretary, this may be opened up again.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I'm doing this show today in respect for our veterans, both living and dead. We can easily talk about Pearl Harbor. I'd rather talk about the men who died that day in the Tangi Valley. All of those SEALs were killed. And there are so many discrepancies that it's worth talking about again. For example, there's a discrepancy between General Colt's public 27-page report on this tragedy and what Apache pilots told him during his probe. The AH-64 Apache serves the Chinook's bodyguards during a typical troop insertion, and they escort them to the landing zone and then target enemy on the ground. But this helicopter, Extortion 17, had no Apache escorts. Do you know that the pilot of this Extortion 17 helicopter was not a special ops pilot? He was a general helicopter pilot. Did you know the special ops commanders at headquarters did not order the Rangers to Apaches equipped with night vision goggles and night gun sights to move to Extortion 17's landing zone? Do you know that there are many, many problems in this report? It seems to be a massive cover-up. I saw the movie The Lone Survivor. I've seen other movies. This would make for a phenomenal movie. This is something that Hollywood should do. Chris on WKZO Radio, please go ahead with your point.
Dr. Savage, it's a matter. Listen, that was not a conspiracy theory of Extortion 17 that was shot down. They were put on a conventional helicopter because special assets, the 160th, was not available. That was a quick reaction force. They were responding to troops in contact on the ground at the time. So it was just put together in short term, and they're going to use conventional helicopters. It was a CH-47B model helicopter, which is was at that time the newest and the greatest out there besides the F model. So there's no conspiracy there.
Okay, no, I hear what you're saying. It was put together quickly, and it was a bungled mission for that reason.
Exactly.
They say planning began at 1 a.m. and lasted less than an hour. They said no one properly coordinated who would watch the squirters on the valley's east side and who would move west to watch Extortion 17's back. In other words, it was put together too quickly. It was rushed. And as a result, the men died. I think that's something you could agree with, correct?
I can agree, and I've done many of these missions with Navy SEALs in conventional helicopters. I've done many of these missions. Just the assets are not available in-country at that time. If you're going to put them on a special ops Chinook, there's no difference, except they got more guns. Exactly the same.
All right, but the main point is all these men are dead, and we all agree that was a tragedy. And we all agree now in looking backwards that, okay, there's no conspiracy. No one sent them to their death. But somebody put the mission together in a negligent manner. Can you agree with that?
I would agree exactly with you.
If there's negligence in a command structure, shouldn't the officer in charge of this negligence have been punished for that?
In my opinion, yes. But it never happens. Look at the incidents of Red River 4-4. Three helicopters that went from Kuwait to Iraq that were launched in bad weather purposely because of did not want to fly during the day due to high threat. There was no threat. That commander was never punished. That whole Chinook crew was killed.
So what happens in the military is often what happens then in government. The PETA principle, they reward the failures, is that it?
Absolutely. No one was punished. It was a mistake. It probably could have been put together more correctly and more timely. But Apache helicopters, there's only so many assets available at the time. There were Apaches in the air. They just weren't near that particular scene. But response.
All right. So, Chris, you have flown Chinooks. Is that what you're saying?
I have flown Chinooks with special ops operators on board with those type of missions.
In this report, Chris, that I'm reading, it says there were no gunships protecting them. There were no Apaches protecting the Chinook. Isn't that a breach of protocol?
It would be a breach of protocol. Whether or not they were pulled off a different target at that time, because there was multiple engagements going on, that was a quick reaction force that was put in to help the Rangers that were on the ground currently in contact.
Then there were Obama's rules of engagement. Right after these men were killed, there were helicopter pilots overhead who saw where the rocket had come from, and they wanted the right to destroy the building in which they were hiding, and they were not allowed to do that. Did you know that as well?
That I did not know, but that sounds like the typical rules of engagement.
I'll read the article. Moments after the shootdown, an Apache pilot pinpointed the source of the RPG but could not fire. Quote, due to rules of engagement and tactical directives, I couldn't fire at the building where I thought the shooter was, so I aimed directly to the west of the building, the pilot told General Colt. Can you believe this, that their hands were tied even after their men died?
If the current rules of engagement at that time, that sounds very correct, that they were not allowed to shoot.
Look, Chris, this is a heartbreak for everyone, but most particularly for the parents of the dead. And I don't think it does them any good to mislead them. On the other hand, I don't think it does them any good to just brush them aside and not let them seek some answers here that need to be answering. Do you think this investigation should be reopened? Let me ask you that as a Chinook helicopter pilot.
I think it should be investigated more for the leadership that made those ultimate decisions. But as far as the conspiracy or theory, this happens many times exactly like this mission. Unfortunately, these crew members were lost. And the big thing is we focus on the crew members. We also, or the Navy SEALs, we also lost 5 crew members that day in that Chinook.
You are right. So what you're saying is that this is a bigger problem. It's not just this. This is a big tragedy because the whole SEAL Team 6 was on that helicopter. But you're saying that things like this happen all too frequently in the military due to mismanagement, in essence.
Exactly. And I just returned from Afghanistan, and the same things are going on at the same time. There are bad command decisions made. Whether or not they're being punished at my level, I don't see that.
Unbelievable. Well, I think we've learned something today. Maybe we've learned some things today. And I do think that whoever put this mission together at the last minute committed some sort of negligence, and I believe that there should be some sort of reward and punishment for negligent decision making. Otherwise, that same person may still be in power. That person who made that decision to put this team together in this faulty manner, which led to their deaths, may in fact have been promoted, and he may get even more people killed unless he is shown to be an inept commander, as he allegedly is by what happened here. All I can say is there's no winners here. There are no winners. It's all losers. It's heartbreak forever for the families. And I appreciate what you said today on the program. I know I didn't intend to go here today, but this is how shows are. And when they're good, they lead us to places we don't intend to go to. And sometimes it leads to some good things happening, as have happened many times on this program. Chris, all I can do is give you a copy of Scorched Earth, Restoring the Country After Obama. I think it'll mean a lot to you as a person in the military. Again, we are talking about the issue of all those SEALs dying back in that Tangi Valley when the troops were killed in that helicopter. And to this day, the parents of the dead men do not believe that the truth has been told yet. The manifest was inaccurate. Who the Afghanis aboard were, their names have not been released. I'm reading other stuff that doesn't make sense. There were no bodyguards flying with them, meaning bodyguard helicopters. The Apaches were not on the mission because, now, okay, we were told they weren't available. We heard that twice from 2 military men. Kobe, K-O-B-E Radio, Greg, line 4, go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, thanks for taking my call. If I could
go ahead, please.
Thing, don't let this Don't let this case die. Keep giving it publicity, because there's more questions than answers. I don't know about the validity of the two previous callers. I was 11 Bravo on the 25th. I discharged out of 9th Infantry in Washington. And this case stinks. I never served in combat, but I trained for combat. 11 Bravo's infantry. I flew on Chinook helicopters from Oahu to Kauai and from Oahu to Maui. And you couldn't pay me to get on a Chinook helicopter with somebody on the ground that could take that thing out no problem. Because it's big, it's bulky, it's loud, it's a beautiful target. And we put we put Navy SEALs on the worst in the worst possible helicopter you could put them on, the most highly trained soldiers we got across the military. And the other thing is, from the book I read about Extortion 17, at the last minute, they pulled Afghanis that were going on that mission on the manifest. The last minute, they pulled them off and replaced them. The mission, okay, has to go all the way up to the top of the Afghanistan chain of command and come down again. There's plenty of places for that mission to be leaked out. The whole thing stinks, and you're doing everybody a service to keep this thing burning. I don't know who these other people are calling. I don't know if they're real-life people. I don't know if this guy flies Chinooks or paper airplanes. I don't know if that was a Special Forces guy. I know I was 11 Bravo, on-the-ground boots, just a low-life infantry soldier, honorably discharged. Those guys were the best of the best. And the Air Force attached to them was some elite crew, too. There's a lot of big questions. Dear God, please keep this issue burning.
Well, there were 30 funerals held across the country, many in small-town America. These are the eddies of America. These are the backbones of America. And I don't think that the patriotic families that produce sons like this are doing this because they hate America. I think they're doing it because they love America. And I think that America needs to answer their questions in plain English, Greg.
Man, you don't know how much of a service you're doing by bringing this up.
I'm just doing it. The Chopper's manifest included 5 Army soldiers, 3 Air Force airmen, 7 Afghan soldiers, 1 Afghan interpreter. All 38 died. 22 of them, such as Petty Officer Strange, were thrown from the aircraft. The rest died inside the fireball. Well, there's a big story here. There was a report. There was an investigation. There was a briefing. The crash took the lives of 17 SEALs and 5 Special Warfare Development Group operators. It made it the worst one-day loss in the history of U.S. Naval Special Ops. Do you understand how big this is? Why is it so big? Men die all the time in war. You'd say they're warriors. They got to expect to give their life for the country. I've heard that cynical answer. I've heard that cynical answer. Well, they're in the military. That's what they do. They swear to give their life for their country. Not so fast. Not when all the members of one of the most elite units in the military are killed at the same time, on the same mission, under suspicious circumstances, and it's sort of swept under the rug. And that's why I think the hero families of these dead men are still pounding the pavement in Washington to get some answers that they haven't gotten because they can't rest at night. Don't you understand that there are thousands of families across America whose sons have died in these wars? Not all of them are asking for investigations. They're living with the heartbreak. They're living with the pain. They're not happy, but they're not questioning the circumstances surrounding the deaths of their loved ones. Here you have the families that are. Are you going to now accuse the families of being conspirators or enemies or this or that? Apparently, they're not satisfied with these answers. Where is the black box? Where did it go? That would have explained some things. Skylar, online from Texas. Line 8, go ahead, please.
Yes, Sav, thank you for taking my call. I served in the United States Marine Corps, and I worked on helicopters. I'm still working on helicopters, so the last 10 years, pretty much avionics and electrical. And what I heard you say was, where's the black box? Families are asking for the black box. I think the public at least needs to know that these components on these blocks, they're not indestructible. It's very possible that RPG, completely obliterated that black box. It's still an electrical component with just diodes and wires. And I mean, it's a little bit tougher than the others, but it could be easily obliterated. I'm not.
All right. Well, that's very good to know. So maybe we can put a check on that and say there's no conspiracy there.
So I'm not saying that it's not, they very well could have it. The helicopter could be in a position or in a condition where it could be removed and data could be downloaded from it. But it needs to be understood that it's not this mythical, indestructible object. And if it's hit by an RPG, it's done. It's completely done. And, that's 10 years of electrical avionics maintenance coming from here. And I work on Blackhawks, Chinooks, Apaches.
I hear what you're saying. So, in other words, that may explain where the black box is. It's gone.
It very possibly.
But there are so many other questions. The helicopter's LZ was not properly vetted for threats. The helicopter was not protected by gunships, which is normal protocol. Commanders who studied afterwards said the mission was too rushed. The conventional Chinook helicopter was ill-suited for a dangerous troop infiltration. Charlie Strange, the father of one of the 30 Americans who died on August 6, 2011, in this attack, asks whether his son Michael was set up by someone inside the Afghan government wanting revenge on Osama bin Laden's killers. That would be SEAL Team 6.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. I'm going to close the show with an email that I got from Eddie. Of course, it's an anonymous person. I'm a retired Chinook flight engineer from CH-47. Baby sees through the special ops MH-47Es. My friend and I laughed our butts off when the soldier of Satan, Obama, and his fake publicity stunt killing of Bin Laden was revealed. We knew the sheeple would fall for it, but we still laughed. When the Chinook was shot down, I was knocked down as deep as I was on 9/11, and I knew it was the intentional murder of witnesses that could expose Obama's farce. I've avoided any books or movies about the incident because it makes me want to pick up a modern-day pitchfork and head to the swamp. When I heard you talking about your book, A Time for War, a couple of months ago, I was driving a lot, so I got it as an audiobook and listened. Now I want to delve into the books and movies about the murder on one of my Chinooks. I like how you incorporate hints and tidbits that any listener of your show can recognize and puts the book into a more personal level. Signed, Eddie. Well, my friends, yesterday when I read from my own novel about one of the guys who died, in fictional now, how he tried to focus on the purest day of his life. All right, here it happens again. I can't do it again. Jim Sora cracked up yesterday. My voice, I couldn't do it. I can't do it now. You're talking about men who left behind mothers and fathers.